Buenas tardes a todos los conectados esta tarde a nuestra sesión de LP. Espero que todos se encuentren bien. Bienvenidos, bienvenidas a todos los participantes de nuestras sesiones, a todos los que nos visitan por primera vez. Gracias. Gracias a los que nos acompañan cada semana. Esta pandemia nos tiene locos, pero pues vamos. Bueno, buenas tardes, Mauro, Alejo, ¿cómo están? ¿Cómo va todo?
Hola a todos, ¿cómo van? Sí, buenas tardes. Bueno, hoy vamos a oír Invaders Must Die, que es el quinto álbum de estudio de Prodigy. El álbum fue lanzado el 23 de febrero de 2009 en el sello de la banda Take Me to the Hospital. Un álbum donde todos los miembros de la banda participaron en el proceso creativo, lo cual es bien interesante. Pues nada, muy chévere este álbum y para amenizar la tarde.
Hola a todos, ¿cómo van? Bienvenidos a esta nueva sesión, creo que es la 15 de LP Podcast, hoy con este gran álbum, un gran invitado. Vamos a escuchar Invaders Must Die, que tuvo cuatro singles: Omen, Warriors Dance, Take Me to the Hospital y el que lleva el mismo nombre del disco, Invaders Must Die. Bienvenidos todos de nuevo, bienvenidos a los nuevos, bienvenidos a los que siempre se conectan.
Ahora Alejo, hoy tenemos un invitado muy, muy, muy especial. Personalmente, me agrada mucho que esté con nosotros compartiendo. Es el ingeniero front of house o de sala de la banda Prodigy, se llama John Burton. Acerca de John, les puedo contar que es ingeniero front of house de conciertos, giras, y no solo se desempeña en la ingeniería, sino también hace monitores, que es muy importante. Ha trabajado como ingeniero de grabación y de transmisión para radio y televisión. Actualmente se desempeña como ingeniero live de bandas como Bombay Bicycle Club, DJ Fresh, Pendulum, Buka Shade, entre otros. Además de ser ingeniero, cuando no se encuentra de gira, es profesor de audio e ingeniería de luces en la Universidad de Derby. Tiene su propio estudio llamado Laundry Rooms con Dave Headley en Sheffield, Inglaterra, desde el 2008. Y han trabajado en su estudio con Jarvis Crocker, Richard Riley y The Prodigy, entre otros. Welcome, John, to LP. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very well. Buenas tardes, everyone. I'm sorry, my Spanish is terrible. I understood some of that, but yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's hopefully going to be an interesting listen.
Was it a good intro? The things that you understand?
Yeah, I understand all the English words.
So. That's fair enough.
Prodigy. Yeah, I think I got the idea anyway.
Yeah, margaritas, chimichangas. Yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah, I think my Spanish is a poco better than that.
So, John, yeah. Thank you for your time. Welcome to the sessions of LP. We'll briefly introduce the moderators. Mauricio, as you know, musician, lives in Villa Alegre, yeah. Singer and guitar player, composer. Manuel works in production, live events, concerts, tours. I'm a rig recording mixer for film and TV. In the group, we have all kinds of professions. We have doctors, we have lawyers, we have chefs, we have sportsmen, we have everybody. We're all related to one thing, and that's music. We listen to music, share music, live music, breathe music every day. And that's how we've created this wonderful group.
Thanks. Thanks so much for inviting me over.
Thank you.
Looking forward to having a listen and a chat and a few questions.
Sure.
And hopefully I can throw a bit of light on some of the mystery of the Prodigy. Not
please
too much
please.
Light, but some.
Okay, John. So as you know, we're going to be listening to the album in its entirety. We're going to be going sets of three songs and then questions on those little pauses. So,
so John, you ready?
Yeah.
So, John, how did you start working with the Prodigy?
It's a good question, actually. I was working with an English boy band called Blue. I don't know if you've heard the band Blue.
Yeah.
I got asked if I'd do a tour with them, and I was kind of going, I didn't really do boy bands. It wasn't the kind of thing I've really been into. And someone said, do you fancy doing this band? And I was going, oh, I don't know. They said, it's 2 weeks in Japan, and it's only 4 gigs. So you get a whole week off in Osaka. I went, yeah, I could do that. And I went out and did monitors. So I did the sound for the band themselves. And a friend of mine, an old friend called Nick Warren, was the sound engineer for the band. And he was doing the front of house and I was doing the stage sound. And we had a really good time. And we hadn't seen each other for ages. And we'd actually met when he was doing the Prodigy on Lollapalooza back in 97 when I was there with Tricky. We got to be friends again. And then after that, he got a phone call from Keith Flint saying, I've got some shows for a new project I'm doing. Will you come and do that? And he couldn't do it because he was doing some pop thing. So he said, will you go and do this thing with Keith for me? And I said, yeah. So I flew out to Milan and did a completely mad fashion show for Donatella Versace with Keith, which just seemed to involve Keith running about like a lunatic, hurting himself, which was should have given an indication of what the rest of my career would be like for the next goodness. So I end up doing some shows with Keith. And at the same time, I met the tour manager, a guy called John Fares, who I actually knew when he first did his first ever gig in the business, which is when he was 17. And he was on a support tour. He was working for a support band, which was his best friend from school, a guy called Andy Pawlak, who was supporting. I was working for Katrina and the Waves, if you remember them. So I was busy walking on sunshine. And,
working on sunshine, right?
Yeah. So, because I'll work for anyone, you know, it's a job. Katrina was good. You know, I did that for quite a few years. But he came up and he was this completely useless guitar tech. He was supposed to be setting up the back line, the drums and the guitars, and he was fantastically useless. He was 17 and we just helped him out every day. We basically did his job for him every day. And then it turns out he's the Prodigy tour manager. And we kind of got together, and when the Prodigy was still writing, Liam's still writing Always Outnumbered, Never Outgunned, which is why Keith had nothing to do. So when that album came to be toured, my friend Nick didn't want to do it anymore. So I got put up along with a friend of mine, Ian, who was the engineer for Placebo. Ian was already working with some of the crew from the Prodigy who were also doing Placebo. So he got the job to start with. He did it for a month, decided it was too loud and horrible, and said, you should get John to do it. It's more his thing. So I got a phone call saying, can you go down and watch Ian work? And if you do a good job, it's your gig. We'll see how you go for a couple of shows. And I walked in. I already knew a couple of the crew. I knew the tour manager and I knew Keith. Knowing Keith, thought, well, actually wasn't much help because it's Liam you have to please. And I started off on my first gig. I remember it very clearly because it was in Spain and it was in a club called the Riviera in Madrid, which if you could ask me if there was any club in Europe where I wouldn't want to start working with a brand new band, it would be the Riviera Club. Because it's awful. It's a truly dreadful club with plastic palm trees, and you mix with the bar right behind you. And where you stand trying to listen to the music, they throw all the empty bottles into a big bucket just behind you. So you're mixing and all you can hear is smash, smash, smash. And that was my first day with the Prodigy. That was a long story, wasn't it? You've got some
time. It's cool. We have plenty of time. Don't worry, man.
Yes, that was my first time.
I wish I could ask the second one, but don't worry. We're going to fall over. Don't worry.
So, John, you come from a studio background. Do you think this has helped you approach live sound in a more creative way?
No, because I don't come from a studio background. I just started doing gigs when I was 17. I've done lots of studio work, and I've kind of got into studio in recent years. I wanted to be a studio engineer, but I didn't get a job in a studio. I applied to the BBC. I'm sure you all have heard of the BBC. I applied there when I was 17 to go and train, because it was the only place you could train to become a sound engineer when I was young, because I'm very old, you see, so at the time. So I applied, but they didn't let me in because I was too stupid, because I didn't have any science qualifications, because all my qualifications were in art. I had art history, English, but no physics, nothing like that. So they said, I'm sorry, you're too stupid to become a sound engineer, proper sound engineer. So I did the next best thing and I got a job in a music shop, which is what you should do if you can't get a proper job. You can work in a music shop selling guitars, because that way you get to play guitar all day. So I played guitar all day. I bought a small PA system. I bought a mixing desk. And I got some speakers and I got a gig in the local pub doing mixing bands. And I was rubbish. And eventually I got better and I taught myself. And then eventually bands took me in the studio. I didn't really start, my studio career kind of didn't start for quite a long time. I didn't actually get a job in the studio until Radiohead sacked me. And Radiohead's manager owned a studio and he took pity on me and gave me a job in his studio, which was, I was already been engineering for about 15 years by then. So I kind of just, I was live sound. Gigs, that's what I've done since I was 17, really. So I did my first rental when I was 17. So only 43, nice. 42 years ago.
Okay, cool. So John, you're primarily a front of house engineer, but you've also done monitors. How can you explain in simple terms for the people who don't know what this is, what these very important roles are, and in what way do these two roles work together for the best possible sound in a live show?
Yes. So the front of house engineer, he or she sits in the gig, listening to the speakers either side of the stage, and they balance the sound that's coming from the stage to make it all sound clear, even, a nice balance where you can hear everything, particularly the vocals, and they're altering the levels. In the old days, we call them a balance control, which I think is a really good. So they're balancing the sound. We do something called sound reinforcement. So we're adding to what's coming off the stage. So depending how big the gig is, we could just be adding some vocal, or if it's a really big gig, we're adding all the sounds and we make it for the audience. The monitor engineer stands at the side of the stage and gets shouted at by the band. So what their job is to make sure that the band are happy on stage. So they're giving a mix to each member of the band, or maybe several different mixes. So they're doing the same as the front house engineer, but they've got to please an audience of one. And they've got to please the audience of one without being able to hear what they're doing, because they're not standing in the middle of the stage. So they've just got to go on what the artist wants to hear. And a lot of the time, you've just got to guess. The most important thing about monitor engineer, though, is if anything goes wrong, it's your fault. So if the singer went out until 3 o'clock in the morning and didn't get any sleep and can't sing because they're knackered, it's your fault. If the drummer can't remember when the chorus comes in, it's your fault. Everything is the monitor engineer's fault. And they will say things like, "I can't hear anything," which you know is a lie because it's really, really loud. What they're actually saying is, "I can't remember how the chorus comes. I was up partying till 6 o'clock in the morning. I forgot to learn the words." So you have to be a very patient person, and you have to be a really good engineer. You have to be better than a front of house engineer, because you probably, instead of just doing one mix for the audience, you could be doing five mixes or seven mixes. And it's the good monitor engineers are very patient people, and you can shout at them and they just go, and they're very understanding. And it's hard work. It's a lot more hard work than being front of house, which is why I prefer to be front of house, because the audience very rarely come and shout at you. It's only happened a few times in my career where I've had the singer's mum lean over the balcony and shout at me, but that was a long time ago. But that's the two different jobs, really. So I much prefer being a front of house engineer. It's because you can hear what you're doing. You can stand there. You make a change, you can hear. You're not having to put up with musicians. Not that there's anything wrong with musicians, Maurizio, but you can be a bit awkward at times. So I prefer being a front of house engineer. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it completely answers the question. And it's funny because I've been playing and on stage and something, but now that you have described the monitor engineer, the next monitor engineer I see, I'm just going to give him a huge hug and not be an asshole.
Be nice.
Yeah.
Be nice. They're working harder than you. They got to work before you did. They're going to leave work after you do.
Yeah, yeah.
John, are we agree that monitor engineering is barely more important than the front of house during the show?
Any idiot can do front of house.
Yes.
As I've proved. Monitor engineers, that's a difficult gig.
That's a difficult one, yeah.
Difficult gig.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Awesome.
Okay. There's a joke there as
okay,
well.
Okay, so we're just going to... Sorry?
The joke is, what's the difference between a monitor engineer and a toilet seat?
I don't know.
A toilet seat only has to deal with one asshole at a time.
It's just like the joke about the lighting and the sound engineers. Nobody comes home shouting the lights.
Exactly.
Exactly. Cool.
Amigas y amigos, recuerden, por favor, seguirnos en nuestras redes sociales. LP Podcast en Facebook, LP.podcast en Instagram y nuestra página web es lppodcast.com. Y van a encontrar toda la información que quieren saber acerca de nuestro podcast.
Okay, so John, how is the process of a sound check for Prodigy? And what advice you as a sound engineer could you give bands to do an efficient and fast sound check?
Okay, so I only worked for the Prodigy for 15 years and we did two sound checks in that time. So the best, fast, most efficient sound check is don't bother. Never turn up for the sound check. Just let the crew do it and just turn up at the last minute, walk on stage, do the gig, have a couple of bottles of champagne, go out clubbing. That's the Prodigy way. So I don't think I ever did a sound check, maybe once with all the band. So with Keith, Maxim, Liam, Leo, Rob, I think maybe once. We did lots of rehearsals where they wouldn't turn up as well. We did rehearsals once where Keith turned up. Keith turned up to rehearse for this tour, in fact, and he turned up on his own because he always had a problem with Firestarter coming, remembering where to come in. So he came in and we rehearsed that. And we did it about 15 times and he got it right on the 15th time. And then he forgot it again and he kept forgetting it. So, you know, we were doing it again. So he realized it wouldn't make any difference however much he rehearsed. He'd always forget where to come in. And that's why, you know, on the record, on Firestarter, you get that zip from the Firestarter. The zip was the clue in the studio for him to come in so that he knew when to come in. That's what Liam said anyway. Keith obviously denied it. We'll never know now, will we? But they never rehearse. They never sound check properly. Liam would come in and listen to tracks at full volume. So you kind of have to understand the Prodigy setup on stage. So you know the number of speakers you need to do a big club. You know, you need like maybe four big bass bins, a big stack of speakers, and that's enough to do a big club. That's what Liam had as his personal hi-fi on stage. So he had enough speakers to do most medium-sized venues right behind him, a foot away from his head. So it was so loud that your eyeballs would do this when you stood where he was. And then we'd have the same as that either side of the stage. So on stage was just this massive noise, the loudest thing. And out front, I would just add a bit more vocal and make it stereo. So they are the worst band in the world to... No band should ever be like them for sound checking, because they were really hard worked because it was so loud. It's so loud on stage. We'd have to warn people when we were going to make noise because you'd see people. If people weren't paying attention, you'd say, look, we're going to make a big noise now. You'd quite often get people working on stage and you'd get local crew and thing working on stage. And you say, we're going to make some noise now. And they just ignore you. And Matt, the keyboard tech, would go and press the start of the track. And quite often Leo, the drummer, would come in and Rob, the guitarist, and they'd do a quick bit of rehearsing. And it'd come in at full volume and you could see people jump back because it was so loud in surprise. Like, what the f*** is that? And that was the Prodigy on stage. And out front, I would just have to try and, what I said before, sound reinforce and balance that with what the audience, which is basically add some drums on top, add the guitar in, balance the keyboards that Liam's playing live with the tracks and beats going on underneath, and add the shouting, add the shouting that was Maxim and the not so loud shouting that was Keith, and try and make it so that it was a worthy audio experience for everyone. So, yeah, you can't really learn anything useful from a Prodigy sound check in the one that we did or the two that we did. So that hasn't helped us. I'm really good at not answering your questions, Alejandro. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you kind of answered what I was going to ask right now, but in general, and maybe speaking like with other artists, not necessarily Prodigy, is there a process like for designing kind of like a live show in terms of audio, like when you're going to begin like maybe a tour or something,
yeah,
where you kind of like speak first with the artist and maybe he's going to give you like a heads up of how he wants to sound and how you can kind of like design that together?
Normally, yes. Normally, you'd have a reasonable conversation with a musician in a reasonable way. The Prodigy, I think the conversations with Liam, it's got to sound good, got to hear the sub, got to feel the sub. That was about it. And Maxim was more worried about what it looked like, so it had to look big. So most of the conversations we had about sound system were how big it was. So we'd say, how many subs do you want? And we'd go, well, we need about 30 meters worth of subs. So how many is that? Well, enough to go from over there to over here that high. And they go, 60? You go, 80? How about 100? We'll have 100 subs. So we kind of did things like that. As many subs as we could take and fit into the gigs, and the biggest subs you could have. And then we kind of got into the science a bit. So when I first started, they'd use the largest amount of EAW. It's an American speaker called the EAW850. And they used the largest amount ever put together in one place. And this is in the days when you just used to stack it up. And that was the first time I saw them. And they liked that because it looked good. I remember we did a gig in South Korea, and the PA system was dreadful. But Maxim was going, we need this every day. He's going, why? It just looks great, because it looked like an old reggae sound system. So none of the conversations that I ever had with any of the band was helpful.
But they had that kind of like old school vibe, no? Like very rock and roll, that it was just like, yeah, okay, like big sound, and yeah, it just looks really good, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of know, you know, when you walked into a Prodigy gig, you'd look at the speaker system and you'd kind of go, I haven't seen that many subs in here before. And you kind of knew what was going to happen. You know, it was loud. You also knew it was going to be really, really bright. So that it was going to be, you know, there were going to be strobes, lots of strobes. It's kind of flash, flash, bang, bang. And that's what it was, you know, it was the Prodigy. No one else sounds like Prodigy. Other bands would come on and you couldn't get it as loud, like, you could use the same PA system for another band and it wouldn't be as loud.
John, in terms of your work and live sessions on tour, what gear do you carry on tour with you? You bring your own consoles, all your sound system? What do you bring?
We'd always take, most of the time, so if ever we're traveling, doing festivals, I'd always carry my own mixing console and my effects rack.
Which console was it?
I used something called a Midas XL3, which is an old analog desk.
Analog, right?
Yeah, proper analog desk. So you can, because it's a dub gig. If anyone saw the Prodigy, it was a very much an old school reggae dub gig, in that there's lots of echoes on the void, on the vocals. So it's really weird for me listening to the album, because I haven't got the shouting over the top. I'm so used to hearing Maxim and Keith and Maxim's ad libs, you know, his shouting bits. And there were always lots of dub echoes. And this is kind of, I think this is how I kept the gig, because I did lots of reggae when I was younger. So I was into dub echo. So every gig that I mix, I'm listening to kind of Studio One version with dub echo. So it didn't matter what artist I was working with. Every gig that I mix sounds a bit like a reggae gig. So I got to work with the Prodigy and it just sounded more like a reggae version of the Prodigy. So kind of dub echoes, but just that was kind of made it exciting and made it interesting. So just to kind of do, so I had to do lots of spinning echoes, putting lots of effects. So Omen, obviously, Maxim singing that live. So when it goes, duh, 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 I'd have to do all those effects in time and add them in live. And that was kind of my approach to it, was to try and keep that kind of excitement and a kind of dubby feel to it. I forgot what the question was now.
What do you bring with you on tour? your own console and your effects.
And on stage, we quite often take Liam's speakers.
Your own monitors.
Yeah, we bring their own monitors for Liam.
But you have in-ears as well?
No.
No, only monitors.
Maxim and Keith were on in-ears, and the drummer and the guitarist, but Liam just stands there with the loudest stereo in the world. Uh-huh. Right behind him, facing forwards as well.
Okay.
And we take all the keyboards and all the band stage equipment.
Backline. But I mean, in terms of audio, it was your own console, monitor console, I guess.
Yeah, and a monitor console and microphones and bits and pieces. No, we use local multicore sometimes.
Okay, cool.
Depends where we were going. If we came to Columbia, I would have used a local mixing desk and I would have just bought my Echo Units collection. Lots of units and a pedal board with guitar effects pedals and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Things to make funny sounds.
Okay.
I couldn't mix the show without. They're so important. Or I could mix the show without them.
But
it keeps me amused. It keeps me amused.
What else do you ask for to have your front of house in your own?
I need the number of subs you need to do the show, and then you times that by 2. And that's the number I need. So if you say, this gig, we need 16 subs, you go, okay, so we need 32. And they go, no, you need 16. I said, no, we need 32. And then we need another 8 just in case. So make it 40. And they go, no, that's too many. You go, yes, it's too many. That's right. How wide is it? Is it 30 meters yet? And they go, yes, it's 30 meters wide. Good. And this is how we worked.
Okay.
We'd ask for side fills by size rather than number of speakers. We'd say side fills. So we have speakers on the side of the stage pointing across the stage. They had to be 3 meters by 2 meters minimum. Ideally, 4 meters by 3 meters. So as long as they were black and filled with speakers and 4 meters wide by 3 meters tall and working, they would be okay. Because Maxim would walk in and go, that's all right.
All about the height.
Maxim's quite tall. Well, he seems tall. So 3 meters is above his head height. 2 meters is above his head height. But 3 meters is like, that's not tall, is it? That is tall. So it had to be taller than him. And obviously wide.
Okay, John, and what kind of delays did you bring on?
So I use things like, I've got a TC delay, the D2, which I always use. I've got one called a Line 6, which is a guitar unit one that makes the sounds like lots of really old, different echo units from the past. It's digital, but it's got a knob. So you can turn the knob and the echo would go, echo, 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 echo. So I could do things like that. And this kept me amused. That made me happy. So you could do lots of different dub stuff. Dub echo. So I had loads of just different echo. I had one with a spring in it, but that used to make too much rattling noise. A space echo, but that was too old, which is a tape echo. So I got a digital version of that. I had something called a chaos pad that you never quite knew what was going to happen with that. But that was used on things like the guitar in Firestarter to get that kind of sound. Okay. Lots of things.
All that gear is it yours or is it Prodigy's?
It's all mine.
It's all yours.
I was 17. So my space echo, I bought it in 1980 and then I stupidly sold it in 1984. I bought it back again in 1988. But I've just got loads of rubbish that I've collected over the years. But I know how it works. I've got lots of old things. But the mixing desk that I started, when I was started working with Prodigy, I didn't own a mixing desk, but I bought a mixing desk while I was working for them. And I worked for them so long, it got too old to use. And it's now in the Science Museum in England. So you know you have a National Science Museum. I sold it to the Science Museum because it got so old. So if you look on the Science Museum website, you can see the Prodigy mixing desk. if you search for Midas XL3 on the Science Museum, and it's still got, you can copy, if you take a photo, look at the photo very carefully, you can copy my mix, because it's still on the mixing desk, and the channels are still marked on the tape. It's left exactly as it was after the last Prodigy concert.
That's a cool one.
Very carefully. Very carefully.
Cool, man.
Ok, recuerden seguirnos por favor en Instagram, @lp.cast. John, tell us a little bit about your experience as a university teacher. Are you giving any online master classes? Is it possible that anybody around the world kind of like can join in and learn from you, from your art?
Yeah, so I've done some master classes recently with a guy in America called Nathan Lively. We did one about a month and a half ago. I'm teaching in Derby, so I'm teaching just regular students on a university degree. So I've been teaching 3 hours today, 5 hours yesterday, online, talking to a screen, very much like this, but with less friendly faces, because none of the students ever turn their cameras on. So if you can imagine me just like not being able to see anything and talking about, and I'm not teaching anything particularly interesting at the moment. So all the really good teaching. So I teach on a sound and light degree, and I started a year ago. In fact, I started when Keith died, I kind of figured it's about time I got a proper job. So I applied for some university jobs, and I got a job in Derby with a guy who actually was my examiner when I did my master's degree. Because I didn't go to university, I went to work in a music shop. Because I was too stupid. So when I was about 50-something, I went and did a master's degree in York. And the guy who was my examiner teaches, and he started this course in Derby. So I went to teach for him, which was great. And I just getting the hang of talking in a lecture room. So my first lecture was 130 students, and I stood at the front, and I talked to them. And that was my first step. And now I've got the same number of students, but I'm talking to them on a little box from my attic, well, from my son's bedroom in the attic, and it's all very weird, and I'm just getting used to it. And things are going okay, I think. I think we'll be all right. I think the students will get a good experience. We've moved all the hands-on stuff, the teach stuff where we actually have to show them things. We've moved that to next year, and we're teaching, or we're doing as much as we can in software, and it's the best we can do. Hopefully they're still, you know, they're still learning, but we're doing 3 hours a week of hands-on stuff. I'm teaching just online, which after years of being traveling the world, I've spent, you know, every country, you know, 70 countries around the world. I've spent an awful lot of time in this room, in this house, which is very strange. My wife is getting very fed up with me being here. She keeps saying, can't you, there must be a tour. Soon there must be a tour you can go on and just get away. I have stuff I want to do and you're just in the way. You know, can't you just, you know, go out for a walk for a couple of days? So I'm stuck here, but trying to do some online teaching. But yeah, it's as hard here as it is there, I'm sure.
So John, a Prodigy is a band that depends a lot on playback systems on computers. How do you manage to prepare like stable and reliable systems? And how does your backup work?
So Liam has always worked across several different computers. So he's always had, I think he had, by the time we finished, he was working across four computers. And they had to have solid state drives. Brilliant. Because when we had platter drives, they would jump because it's so loud. Before we had, he had sampling keyboards. He used to use the W30 sampling keyboard. So he played the loops on the keyboard. But when he moved to Ableton, just about the same time as I started. So he does all the loops in Ableton. He just triggers the loops. And he goes from one song is on one laptop, the next song is on another laptop. So if something goes wrong with that laptop, he switches to the second laptop, and he's got a spare behind him. And if that breaks, he throws it at Matt. Matt's the keyboard tech. Matt is a completely mad person that I know you know him.
He introduced us, yeah.
Sorry? He introduced us. And yeah, he's looked after Liam for 10 years, I think, or more. He's kind of a genius in that kind of crazy, kind of mad scientist way. but keeping Liam's equipment working, because Liam, like, he doesn't like change. He likes the same thing. He wants the keyboard he knows. And if something goes wrong, he's just as likely to throw it at you, or Matt. He's likely to throw it at Matt or into the audience. I've seen Matt dive into the audience to try and rescue a laptop. Keyboards, they don't mind, but laptops, you see, it's got the hard drive inside. We can't let someone get hold of the hard drive, because that's the secrets are all there. Yeah, so lots of laptops, lots of keyboards. And the best thing is, because he never rehearses and we never do proper sound checks, every now and again, Liam would turn up with a new keyboard and I'd get a message where Matt would say, there's a new keyboard. And you're going, what is it? He's going, I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. He's just going to bring it on for the show. But I need a mini jack. And you're going, no, not a mini jack. Please, not. So we need a connector for one of these, because it's a small keyboard that he's just got. And the smallest keyboard he ever bought was about this big. And it's one of those mini things, like a little tiny knob. And he started playing it, and it was the loudest thing. And all the volumes were, because he didn't rehearse. And it was like, I thought we'd killed the first 10 rows of the audience, because this thing just was like, but it's Liam, he's the boss. He can do whatever he likes. It doesn't matter, because he pays the wages.
Of course. John.
Yeah.
Before you started your tours or whatever, as a team, how close are audio, video, and lighting engineers involved in the creative design of the live show? You know what I mean? Like, you have to work as a team, and then you go to the rehearsals and do all the things. How does it work?
Yes, in the imaginary world, that would be absolutely great, wouldn't it? Yeah, we'd all have like a really good plan. So I remember a couple of meetings with the band. One of them was Liam said, this is a meeting for Invaders, I think. He said, I want it to look like a rehearsal room, and I want like windows, and I want cables all over the place to make it look like we're rehearsing in the studio. And we're going, just sounds like you're describing what a gig looks like until we tidy everything up. And he's going, yeah, and I want a window, and Keith's going to jump through the window and start the show. And I remember Keith sitting there going, do I have to jump through a window? I don't want to jump through a window. And then we cut the Invaders Must Die set, which I don't know if you saw any photos of the original, had all these alien heads. And I don't know where it came from. That was the design for that was, I luckily have nothing to do with the design. All I do is I turn up at the last minute and go, you can't put that there. I've got 40 subs. I've got 40 meters of subs on this tour, and they're 2 meters tall. So all this bit, that's mine. That bit there, that's mine. That bit behind Liam, that's mine. Bits at the side, that's mine. You can put all your shit up here, all right? But this bit, that's mine, all right? And that's that was the planning. And yeah, and they'd say, oh, can you just do that? And you go, no. And the best way is with the monitor engineer, Joe Campbell. He has the hardest job, because he's the monitor engineer for not just any band, but the most awkward band in the world. Because you've got the loudest band on stage, literally the loudest band I've ever worked with or ever heard of. It's like Motorhead, but with bass. You know, Motorhead, let me just place the thing, goes ding, 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 ding. If that was Liam, it'd go ding, ding, ding. So it's like Motorhead, but with bass. It's just loud, you know. And so Joe was saying, like, Joe's gig is the hardest gig in the world. So he's got to, you know, sort this out. And he's going, the lighting people are going, can you just move that? And he's going, no. Going, yeah, just move that, make it a bit smaller. And he's going, no. So why? Because I don't want to. It's not my job. Oh. So we'd have conversations like that. The best one was, we had one tour where the lighting guys wanted to put these, you know, have you seen these plastic poles with lights inside them that go? So they put a load of this in front of Liam's speakers, and they're saying, it won't be too loud, will it? We're going, yes, it'll be too loud. So, but they might rattle. And we're going, well, they will rattle. So, you know, it's a stupid idea. And they're going, yes, it's going to look really good. And we got to the first gig and we were three songs into it. And Liam kept looking around going, and obviously he's never rehearsed or heard this before or seen it because he didn't bother turning up. And this thing's going behind him. And then someone in the audience threw a glow stick, you know, like those glow sticks that light up, threw one at him and it hit him on the head and he was really angry. So he had a giant glow stick behind him. So he started pulling the glow sticks from behind him and throwing them into the audience because he was really angry. And he did £10,000 worth of damage in 4 minutes. So we've never had any lights behind him since then, which is what we told them would happen.
Hey, who was your production manager? You were your production manager?
See, this things go out, get out of hand, don't they? Because the creative people get involved. And no matter how many times you say, that's not a good idea, they go, oh, it's art. And you go, it's not a good idea. And then afterwards you go, it wasn't a good idea. So this is the way.
It's a very suffer production, right? I mean, it's like, great. You suffer a lot as a crew member. You suffer a lot with the things that happen on stage. I mean, with the glow stick and whatever, and all the angry. And you say, like, hey, I want to do a proper job, like prepare something, do my thing. No, don't worry. It's art. It's called art.
Yeah, art. Yeah. We like art, don't we?
Well, yeah.
Okay, John, that was extremely enlightening. That's really good because you, of course, we were expecting like these like really big detailed things, but you wouldn't imagine that artists like Prodigy would have kind of like that chaos. But actually, that's what makes it like unpredictable and what makes it like just unique. No, that which is awesome.
Yeah, and also the great thing about Liam is he's kind of got. If you have a conversation with Liam, it's he either says yes, all right, or shit, and there's nothing really in between. It's either all right or shit. You go, how's that? Shit. How can we make it better? Shit. And if I change this a bit, I'm not interested. Show me something else. And so he's quite, you know, he knows what he wants. And when he likes something, he likes it. And if he doesn't like it, he wants it changed. So he always knew where you stood. There's none of this like, yeah, I think it's okay. You know, it's like, shit, good, shit.
But it's a good approach in that sense that it's got very, it's very chaotic. It's curious that you mentioned Motorhead with bass because the loudest thing I've ever heard in my life was Motorhead. And when you said that, I imagined, how do you compare it with Motorhead? And when you said with the bass, it was just, oh man, that's insane. So yeah. And they do have kind of like that very old school vibe of it just has to be fucking loud and that's it. No?
The thing is, it isn't actually that loud in the sort of, in the way that Motorhead is all kind of mid-range. It's the kind of mid
yeah,
sound.
Yeah, completely.
Prodigy is all somewhere. It's bass. It's the frequency. Bass. It's all about the bass. I remember I couldn't do some shows, so a guy called Big Mick, who's very famous as
Metallica.
Metallica's
engineer. Of course. Metallica's engineer, of course.
Liam said, why can't you do these shows? And I said, I'm busy doing something else. He said, well, who's going to do it? And I said, Big Mick. He said, who's he? And I said, Metallica's engineer. And he went, all right. And then I told Big Mick, I found out Big Mick and said, do you fancy doing Prodigy? And he went, what's it like? And I said, it's like Metallica, but with bass. And he went, what do you mean? It's a dance band. I said, it's like Metallica with bass. And he turned up and afterwards I said, what was it like? And he said, it's like Metallica with bass, but more shouty, which it is, you know.
And a reggae thing between that, right?
Mick didn't have the reggae thing at all. No, he didn't get that at all.
No. I mean, the Prodigy sound is like a being on an island, smoking weed, Jamaica, but with distortion, with bass. I mean,
yeah, that's kind of how I do it without the weed.
A lot of dub, right?
Yeah, that's my bit. When Mick did it, it was more like Metallica with bass.
that will be the name of this podcast: Metallica with bass.
Yeah, I think Liam said, I said, what was it like to Liam? He went, guitars were a bit loud. Liam doesn't like the guitar. He never liked the guitar. It was just, it filled up the space on stage, didn't it?
Okay.
Amigos, recuerden seguirnos en Facebook, nos encuentran como LP. Síganos en todas nuestras redes para saber qué viene y para ver podcasts pasados y escuchar. So, John, you there, man?
Yeah.
Cool. John, as the band has grown, how has its live production evolved? Like from the moment that you get there and the last shows, how has it evolved?
So, can you say that again?
Yeah. I mean, like, as the band has grown from the beginning, how has its live production evolved?
I started in 2004. So they've been going a long time before I started. And they had such a reputation. I remember the first time I saw them play live was actually in America. And I was on Lollapalooza tour when it was still a big tour. And I'd been out there for a couple of weeks, and they came in each at Lollapalooza on the main stage. You'd have the main headline act, and then you'd have an act that came on afterwards that were kind of the people go home act. And they had loads of sort of English dance acts. So Orbital came out and did it. The Orb came out and did it. And then I walked into production one day, and all the guys are sitting there going, we've just had all these requirements from this English dance band. And I'm going, The Prodigy, do you know them? And I'm going, yes. And they're going, they want loads of extra speakers on stage. And I'm going, yeah. I said, are they loud? And I'm going, yes. But they're supposed to be a dance act. I was going, have you ever listened to their music? Do you know what you booked? Because they thought it was going to be like, because they'd had 2 weeks of Little Fluffy Clouds with Alex, you know, doing the Orb thing, nice, and Orbital doing their kind of nice quiety dance thing where people, you know, they could turn it down. People would go, oh, this is nice, chill out, relaxed. And they booked the Prodigy for the same slot. So the main act was Tool, I think, on that year. So Tool finished, and then the quaint English dance act would come on and do a bit of nice fluffy music. And then the Prodigy turned up, and I remember the Prodigy starting and Keith running on stage and going, do you fucking want it or what? And all the Americans were going, I don't think so. Hey, are this in the guy? We don't want these guys. And they were brilliant. And I remember thinking, because they had so many more speakers, and they were the last band on, they were supposed to be the nothing band, and they came out and just smashed it. And all the English crew were watching the Americans totally panic because there were serious noise levels. And you try and explain to Keith there's a serious noise level, and he doesn't fucking care. You know, and it was just hilarious. So they were already completely mad when I joined. I just did more science with the bass. I kind of became a bass scientist and got more and more interest in sub, to the point where I'm actually now an academic, and my colleague Adam at university, we're now trying to start the world center of sub bass experiments, because we're both totally obsessed with sub bass. So most of the world's knowledge about sub bass is going to be centered in Derby. So if you want to know about sub bass, that's the place to come. So that didn't really answer your question either, did it? But never mind. Next.
It did. Don't worry, man. Don't worry.
Regarding the answer that you gave to the previous question, the Prodigy is a very loud band. I mean, loud on stage and loud in front of house. Do you use a mastering bus compressor in order to not get like the sound guys on top of you and just like, it's too loud?
No. I'm more clever than that. So I use, this is where it gets very scientific. So I apologize to everyone. So all around the world, and I'm very involved in this, in the research in it, and I actually did my master's degree. So I did a master's degree by research, and my research project was how to make the Prodigy louder than anyone else and still keep underneath the noise level. And the secret is the fact that we use something called, the human ear works in different ways at different levels. And when they monitor the sound, they look at the sound, they don't look at all the frequencies. They look at the mids and the tops. They ignore the sub. So the first time I tried this experiment was at a festival in England called the V Festival. It was 2008. two shows. You did one in the south and one in the north, and everyone swapped bills. And I had this idea, and I had to sell the idea. I sold the idea to the manager because he's stupid and didn't understand what I was saying. He just all he heard was, it will be better. Okay, so then I had to try and tell the people at the festival, but they were listening more carefully. And I had to go and say, I want to add an extra 60,000 watts of sub bass to make it quieter. And they were going, I don't understand. I said, I want to add extra sub bass to make it quieter. And obviously this doesn't make sense to anyone, does it? So my idea was to add not the bass you hear, like the boo, 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 but you know that stuff you feel, the stuff that makes the hair on the back of your neck, so that when this sub comes in, you kind of go, wow, that's nice. I like that. So when the bass drops, it doesn't just drop and you can hear the bass. You go, mmm. So when the bass dropped with all the extra sub, all the audience go, what was that? And you're going, that's the extra 60,000 watts of sub that's just doing very, very low frequencies. And the meter that the noise measurement people have does this. It's not looking all the way down there. It's stopping somewhere above that. So it doesn't change. So I can make it. So on a normal meter reading, if you meter it on how loud it actually is, it's going from 100 to 120. But on the meter that's only looking at the mids and tops, it's just staying at the same place. This was my science. And you can read this science in a proper academic paper that I have published on the Audio Engineering Society. So it worked. And I tested it and run experiments and actually ran the experiments on the Prodigy Tour. So, yeah, we used lots of really low frequency sub because that way you got feeling. You've got that feeling that you're at a really loud gig, but it's not hurting your ears.
That's incredible. That's also kind of like a physical body reaction to that sub, no? So it's kind of like we're not playing right now with the audio, but also with the sensory of how your body reacts to that, no? Maybe compared. I don't know if you get this analogy, but like if you're on a roller coaster and you just start going down and you get that really hollow thing, then you go back up.
You're stuck on a roller coaster, then it goes down and it goes up. Yeah. But yeah. See, the important thing is, what do we hear with? Our ears are only part of our hearing system. We hear with our ears and we hear with our body. We hear with our skin. If it's loud enough, you sense sound with all of your body. Your ears are just the best bit. In the same way that if you put something next to your skull, you can hear through your skull. That's why, you know, when you see people who've got a hearing aid behind on their head, because you can hear through your skull. Ears are only part of this system. So I'm appealing to the other parts. I'm making the other parts feel loud.
Can you share the paper so we can read it?
I was looking for the paper. I think I got it. But if not, if you have the link to us, it would be really cool.
I don't keep
it. Well, later. Later. We can share this with everybody later anyway. So don't worry. Right.
But okay. Yeah, it's science.
Awesome. That's really cool. Okay, apart from all this, sorry, you were going to say something?
No,
I was actually going to completely change the subject, so I don't know if you wanted to say something else. Okay. No, I was just wondering, like more on a personal level, and before COVID, when you were not on tour, what would you like to do? What are your interests? Like all besides all this audio and sound and what you do, do you have any hobbies, interests apart from this?
Music? Working in the studio? That's my hobby. My hobby was I've got an expensive recording studio. Alejandro will understand. I put all my energy and money into a thing that is supposed to make money called a recording studio. And if you work really, really hard like Alejandro does, you might make a tiny bit of money. I've got a recording studio that's never really made me any money. But I love working. I've been mixing bands. During COVID, I've been spending my time. When I'm not teaching, I'm mixing multi-tracks. I'm working for a Romanian, just done an album with a Romanian band who would like to be the Prodigy, called Sedative. I've been working for a Danish goth rock band, mixing their album. So I like to mix things. Been working with my son. We're now doing remixes together. He's at music college, and we're doing remixes, but we haven't got a name yet, so we're trying to decide on a remix name. So I do music, I've got a family, I go for walks, I make things, speakers, effects units. I'm really boring. I don't really do much. I do lots of things. Oh, and I teach, and I write for a magazine called Sound on Sound, and I do loads of stuff to do with music, same as I did when I was 17. But I just started playing the guitar again. So it's the solo album in about 20 years. When I'm 80, I'm going to release my solo album that I've been working on for the last 30 years since I got dropped by the bastard record company.
The new Chinese democracy, are you working on?
So I'm going to do something creative.
Cool, man.
John, Prodigy, of course, you guys, we have established very clearly that Prodigy is a loud band. But how do you guys, protect yourself? Like, how do you use, ear protection, good monitor, monitoring systems? So this isn't a problem?
Cruel ear protection on stage because it's loud up there. It's actually not that loud out front for the audience. It was quite loud at the front. It's mainly the sub, so it's not actually that bad with your ears. For where we were, but no.
You don't have a system to protect yourself or the band members?
The bands used to wear, it was just too loud for them on stage. They never did. I don't know why they're not deaf, but Liam, you can have a conversation when he's not deaf. He confounds science, but I wouldn't recommend it. It's too loud. I would never go up there. It's too loud for me.
So, John, you use plugins in Ableton as part of your effects change live.
Yeah.
Why did you decide this, and how do you deal with latency?
Most of it's effects, so you don't have to worry about latency because most of it was delays and stuff like that. I used to use an old MXR distortion pedal on Keith's vocal, but I got bored of changing the batteries, so I moved to Ableton because Liam had Ableton, and I got a free copy. So... because he was sponsored by Ableton. So I use Ableton because I got it for nothing. And it seemed to work. And I had lots of quite good effects in straight away. And then I progressed to... Yeah, I stayed on Ableton, actually, because Ableton's really rock solid because it's made for live performance. The latency is never such an issue because I'm not treating a vocal. I'm mixing something back in, so it's all just effects. And it's like Keith's vocal. We tried to get different sounds for different songs. So every song had a kind of character. Try and build a kind of character for each song. So things like you played, I think, Run earlier, and that was all about a really hard vocal sound, really distorted kind of edgy sound, which was his vocal with some distortion added in. So the fact it's slightly out of time didn't really matter. So most of the things with dub echoes where the latency is the amount of time it takes for the computer to process the sound. So you always get that annoying slight delay. Like, you know, when you can hear yourself on the telephone with a slight echo, you'd get that. So we try and keep it as short as possible, but because the things I'm doing didn't really matter. And there's so much chaos going on anyway. It's not a hi-fi gig. It's not like going to see Sting. You know, people go, oh, what an amazing sound. You know, people go to a Sting concert and go, oh, the sound was perfect. People don't go to Prodigy Sound and go, oh, it was so crystal clear. They go, that was a lot of bass. So... lots of dub echoes. It's not hi-fi, what we did. There's nothing clever.
Punk-fi.
Lo-fi. Prod-fi. That's what it is, prod-fi.
Hey, John, can you tell us a little bit more about the Invaders machine? What is it?
Ah, that's a secret. You have to get Matt Davey on here, and he will explain it to you. It's the outside of it. Is one of those, I think it was Missile Command. I don't know if you remember that. Was that a big video game in Colombia? Missile Command?
Missile Command? Missile Command, yes. They have in Atari 2000, yeah.
So the thing would go... and that was Missile Command. So the outside of it is Missile Command. Inside of it... is a product of Matt's deranged mind in the form of a keyboard. And it can only be controlled by the missile command controllers. So you had a fire button, boop, 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 up, down. So if imagine it's a musical version of Missile Command made by a lunatic. That's what the Invasion Machine is. And you can destroy aliens with it.
But it's a synth. It's not a synth.
Sorry?
It's a synth?
It could be. It could be a secret weapon. Who knows? It's the Invader's Machine. There's got to be some mystery. I can't tell you everything.
Okay, yeah, John, we always ask our guests to recommend three albums, whatever you want, like new, old. What do you have there?
What do I have? Can I just look in my box of records?
Yeah, of course.
See, that was hard because I didn't get much warning. So I had to dig around. And this isn't the record, but this is the band. And this really affected me. But it's this band. Do you know this band?
Killing Joke.
Killing Joke. So the first Killing Joke album, which is called Killing Joke, is absolutely brilliant. And it had a big effect on my career as an engineer because they made really hard guitar music with keyboards and dub echo. So if you listen to Change or actually any Killing Joke for the first 10 years, but the first album, War Dance, tracks like that, Requiem, Change, were a really big effect on my musical career and my career as an engineer. And my first tour as an engineer for a band was for the support band on a Killing Joke tour. And they were almost as loud as The Prodigy, with not quite so much bass. So that was a big album. So Killing Joke, Killing Joke. The album that made me want to be a musician was probably this one, which is a band called Slade. Now, from this album, you can try and work out how old I am. Okay, so I bought this new, and it came out in 1972, all right? It came out in 1972, can you imagine that? And it's a live album, and it was their version of Steppenwolf's Born to be Wild that made me want to be a guitarist. That's a good album. It's not actually a very good album, but it's important to me, and that's all that matters. And then I just found this one, but it's still an important album because this is The Clash. And if I need to explain this album, then you haven't been paying attention to music. There, that's three albums.
Thank you. Awesome. Really good. Thanks. We're making a really interesting list with all the people that have been on our podcast. I'll give you the link also so you can check out like the other guests' recommendations.
Did they have the records? That's the important thing. Did they have the records?
Not really.
Not with them at that time? No, not really. You're the first. You're the first one. Yeah, that's true.
It's vinyl.
Yeah.
It's vinyl.
Yeah.
The important thing is that you mentioned The Clash, and that's it, man. Best band of the world. John, thank you very much for your time.
It's a pleasure. It's lovely to meet all of you. Sorry I didn't get to chat personally with all of you, but I'm sure it's just been lovely. Take care. Everyone stay safe. Look after yourselves. Keep being a really good community because it's all about community and it's all about meeting people and having fun and talking about loud music, particularly bass. And it's all about the younger generation and getting to hit things with big red sticks. This is the important thing.
Thank you very much for your time, John.
Take care.
John, awesome. It's a pleasure.
Thank you to meet you, man.
Thank you for your jokes. It's been a
pleasure. Thank you for your English jokes. Thank you, man.
Awesome.
John, thank you very much. This was really nice. Really cool experience. You have been like a really, really, really great guest. Thank you. And you are welcome here in Colombia. I told you before, if you're going to be around here, give us a call.
Give me a call if you're in Mexico.
I will do.
Bad. To take tacos, not to come to my house.
Tequila.
not to move into my house.
Yeah. As I said, and everyone knows, mi casa es mi casa.
All that matters.
That's all that matters. Chicos, gracias por estar acá. Gracias por compartir con nosotros. Gracias por conectarse temprano. Esperamos verlos en la retransmisión otra vez a los que quieran repetir esta gran experiencia. Y nos vemos en 8 días con un álbum que... Para mí es muy especial. Voy a invitar a muchos amigos. Mire, gente que sabe, que me conoce acá, sabe que es muy especial para mí. El álbum que juntó punk, rock, rockabilly, Isla, chévere, es Sublime. Y lo vamos a tener aquí el próximo jueves. Y va a ser con su álbum Sublime. Entonces nos vemos en 8 días, amigos. Preparen todo lo que tengan que preparar para escuchar Sublime, if you know what I mean. Gracias por todo, mi gente.
Gracias a todos.
Nos vemos.
Thank you, John.
Cuídense.
Ciao.
Have a nice night.